Welcome to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I'm Mona, and I was married for 30 years, in that relationship for 32, and we didn't find out we were a neurodiverse couple until our 29th year of marriage. And I've been divorced since 2018, and together we have an amazing daughter who's thriving and doing fantastic. And today I have another wonderful guest on the podcast who is in a mixed neurotype relationship. And Chris Forrest, I'd like to welcome you to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm really glad you're here. I'm glad I found you on social media. So I'm always looking for new folks to bring onto the podcast to share their stories, because the more we can educate the world about how there's challenges in any relationship, but there's unique challenges in neurodiverse relationships, and how people are working through the challenges and focusing on what's positive about being in a neurodiverse love relationship is so important. So, Chris, I'd love if you could share a little bit about your journey and your journey in your marriage. And kind of what brought you to the point that you're, you know, doing some things on social media and doing some coaching.
Yeah, so I'll start with a little bit about my background with ADHD. Kind of growing up, I didn't really understand it or know what it was, which I think is pretty common for a lot of people. And just hearing it there, here and there, you know, you hear the stigmas about it, and it starts to become like a negative thing. And so growing up, as I discovered that I had it, and I discovered on my own, so it was a self-diagnosis in the beginning, and then I did get it confirmed later on with a psychologist. But growing up, just having this really negative outlook on it, and it really took a toll on my self-esteem and how I saw myself and my capabilities when it came to being able to be successful just in life in general. So a lot of my journey was spent in a negative place, until I really started to learn more about ADHD, doing my own research and discovering what it means, and seeing how it's not so much a negative thing. It's not something that you have to struggle with for the rest of your life. It can actually be a positive thing. You can actually use it to your advantage. And if you structure your life the way that works for you and your brain, you can actually have a really happy life and a really productive and successful life. And so that was the biggest thing that really helped me, just coming to that acceptance when it comes to my ADHD diagnosis. And then with my partner, we met online. We were both on a dating site. And we took this this kind of personality test, I guess, or a relationship personality test. And we found out that we matched pretty well. It was 95%, I think it was. Wow. So we had a lot of core things in common, as far as our morals and the basics and the foundations of what we believed, in our partnership. So I think that that's a really big reason for why we are successful. But then as we got together, of course, we learned that those foundations, those core things are really important, and they're helpful, but there's still those little nuances about a relationship that you kind of got to work through, especially when you're neurodivergent, which is something that I was on the journey of accepting, but my partner hadn't really accepted at the time that we got together. And for a lot of his life, his family just kind of, it was like a secret. It wasn't something that they discussed with him. Maybe they talked about it with amongst themselves, and kind of without him, and didn't really include him in accepting who he was and the way he was and everything like that. So for a lot of his life, he just brushed it off as, oh, I just have anxiety and everything like that. And he didn't really come to accepting it until he got into a serious relationship. I was his really first serious relationship. Mm-hmm. And us just having to, me helping to educate him about himself was a lot of what went on with the beginning of our relationship. And also me learning about him, because growing up the way that I did, I had a lot of expectations about what a relationship should be and how your partner should treat you and how they should think, and just all of these assumptions and expectations that weren't really helpful with this type of relationship, being in a neurodivergent relationship, especially with a partner on the spectrum. You kind of have to give a lot of that up, because you have to be able to be more direct with things. And I'm used to people just kind of like, you know, the neurotypical world of, oh, this is assumed that if person does this, then that means that they love you. If they don't do this, then that means that they don't care about you and stuff like that.
Yep.
So yep. That was a big one. That was a big one that I had to get rid of and let go when it came to trying to make this type of relationship work. And it was a struggle for me a lot in the beginning of our relationship.
Sure.
So yeah, just along the journey, just helping him understand himself, me understanding him, and then also helping him understand me, because there was a lot of assumptions that came along on his end as well, as far as how I should be and what I should be capable of and everything like that. So just a lot of learning about each other in the beginning. And I think that's so important when it comes to, especially a neurodivergent relationship. It's so important to really understand each other's diagnoses and, also the individual things about each other, not just because of your diagnoses, but just little things here and there that you really appreciate or that your partner really loves and everything like that. I think it's important for any relationship to go through that stage, but especially a neurodivergent relationship, because it can be a little challenging, a little more challenging than your neurotypical relationships.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, you are much younger than me. So you're in your early 30s, and you and your husband have been together, you said 9 years, I think married 7 years. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So we've been together almost 9 years and married almost six.
Almost six. Okay. And you have two children?
Yes, we have 3 and a 1-year-old. They'll both be 3 and 1 in November.
Yeah. So you've got two young children, and yes. You know, you've been together a while, but in the beginning, like you said, you had to learn about each other, not just your neurology, but the things that you each liked and wanted in mm-hmm. a relationship. And you had different ideas mm-hmm. of what a marriage should be all about. And I think that's going to resonate with a lot of the listeners, because I hear this often from couples and from individuals. So, you know, I know one of the things that a lot of folks find difficult when they don't know that they're a neurodiverse couple at the beginning of their relationship is sometimes it's really difficult to be curious in mm-hmm. the way in which, you know, they communicate with their partner because of those assumptions, because, you know, we come into our marriage or relationship thinking, oh, this should work the way it does in a rom-com, or this should work the way it does for all my friends, right? So I'd love to talk a little bit about how you both kind of engaged in that curious state on a regular basis. How did that look for you, and how did that help you?
Yeah, so like you said, that's a really big thing that I learned along my journey, and understanding that we do think differently as people, and because of our diagnoses, we also interpret situations differently. So knowing that, I have to make sure that I approach our conversations with a curious mind and a want to understand. It's so easy to fall into those patterns, like I said, because of how we grew up. So when I'm curious and I come to him, it could be about a disagreement or just a regular conversation, just making sure my mind is open to wanting to understand. It keeps me calm because I don't know if it has to do with my ADHD. I am quick tempered. Mm-hmm. And when I approach a situation with wanting to understand, it helps keep me calm and keeps me from overreacting. And I come in more solution focused. And it helps me to think about what's being said and what should be considered here that may not be coming across with his words or maybe even about myself. Maybe getting curious to why maybe I'm feeling frustrated. So for example, like on the surface, I can interpret my husband being short with me during a conversation as he doesn't care or he doesn't love me. But I'm not actually considering the fact that maybe he's dysregulated because maybe something happened recently, or maybe he just simply doesn't realize that I need him to be more present in this moment. And I have to explicitly state that to him.
Mm-hmm.
So when I come curious, I'm able to take a step back and kind of think about things from an overall perspective instead of causing negative situation because we're getting heated and we're not necessarily thinking about the situation as a whole. And then for me, it could be as simple as maybe I'm really upset at this moment. For example, my husband leaves his socks on the floor a lot. Maybe I'm not necessarily upset because he's leaving his socks on the floor. Maybe I'm just dysregulated at this moment because I didn't get enough sleep last night. So it's like taking that pause and being able to look at the situation as a whole and seeing if there's anything else that needs to be considered and brought into this moment that can help us understand each other a little bit better so that we're able to move forward in a positive way.
That was so beautifully stated, Chris. I think, you know, the fact that, again, you knew early on that you were each very different neurologically was probably, you know, a blessing, but mm-hmm. also it could be a challenge because when you know so much, you realize that it may take extra work to work, mm-hmm. work through some of the things that might come a little bit easier to other folks, you know. But I yes. love the curiosity mindset. And I do think it's a mindset. And it wasn't a mindset that I had through most of my marriage because I was looking at our marriage through a very neurotypical lens, right?
Yes, exactly.
And you know where those assumptions get you. So yes. Lots of dysregulation on Mona's part. So yeah, it was really challenging. So I love the way you explained how you could both be in a dysregulated place for different reasons and understanding mm-hmm. that that could cause challenges and conflict, but looking at your partner as your teammate, not your exactly. enemy, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I love that. So I know another thing that is really, really a challenge for lots of couples, and it's something that it sounds like you and your partner have worked through in a lot of situations, is the black and white thinking that sometimes the autistic partner may have, and how maybe different actions and behaviors can help or not help mm-hmm. and cause challenges. Because if we don't understand that the black and white thinking, it may be part of how our partner is wired and that mm-hmm. is the way they prefer to communicate, we might get angry because we're looking for something else. So how does that look in your relationship, in your marriage?
Yes. So the best way that I've found to help my husband really understand and grasp the need to change some of his behaviors that was hurting the relationship was to present it to him in that black and white terms. So saying things like, if you do X, it will equal this for the marriage. Or if you do Y, it will negatively affect the marriage in this way. And it's not that he can't make those changes when I tell him, oh, XYZ makes me feel sad. It's just that presenting it to him in that way doesn't always work to start turning those gears in his brain so that he knows that he needs to make a change, because the way he interprets feelings or empathy is very different from maybe neurotypical people or other people who would respond to someone expressing to them that they feel sad. So for my husband, and I don't know, I won't say this is every autistic person, but I know for my husband on the spectrum, for him, he really understands that X equals Y or A equals B. When I present it to him that way, it helps him make that connection that, oh, I need to change my behavior so that I can get this more positive outcome that I would like to have in my marriage. So yeah, that's how I use black and white thinking with him. And I feel like it works for us to be able to understand each other.
That's a really great example or series of examples. And I think a lot of times we don't understand that we're in conflict or fighting with our partner because of our very, very different ways of processing and thinking. And I remember, you know, I didn't know I was in a neurodiverse marriage when this happened, but my ex-husband had not worked for, I would say it was 6-7 years when I had this conversation with him. And I said to him, if you do not go back to work, I will divorce you. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't think I could have been more black and white. Right? So it took him a while to find a job. And when he found that job, he made a commitment to himself. And I think he thought he was making a commitment to our marriage to never, ever be unemployed again. But what I forgot to say, Chris, was... not only do you need to keep your job, but you also need to be present on a regular basis in this marriage, and your job can't become all consuming. So I forgot that part. So I think that, you know, our examples are really helpful, and I think it will resonate with both partners. You know, I needed to change the way I communicated, and my ex could have probably changed the way he communicated too. We both had an opportunity to learn and grow. So what about your husband's his way of communicating with black and white thinking? Is there something that he does that maybe you now understand better, and it's not just you communicating to him so he can understand better? Is there anything that you want to speak to related to that?
So when it comes to how he communicates with me, I think because of repetitiveness and speaking with him a lot throughout the years, I've been able to kind of pick up on how he's trying to communicate things to me. And then if I don't understand, of course, always ask. But I've gotten to a point with him where I really understand that when he's stating this, I need to look at, okay, he's telling me one thing, but I think what he's saying is he's missing something that he's not explicitly communicating. So then we go into that. And a lot of the time he thinks about things on the surface, like what's presented in front of him, instead of really digging down deep into what he's actually feeling. And I think that's a common thing with people on the spectrum, is they don't explicitly express how exactly they feel very well. So you kind of have to be, I feel, at least with my husband, I kind of have to be that person who interprets things and tries to figure it out for him, because he can't always express it. He may say something is going on like right in front of him, for, let's say, for example, oh, you left the dishes in the sink or whatever, and he's getting all frustrated and upset about that. But in reality, what he's actually telling me is he wants me to be more consistent with making sure things are clean, which is something I struggle with ADHD. And so that's why it's helpful for us to be able to have, and I'll go into this, have that structure with each other so that we're able to kind of make sure we're meeting each other's needs, make sure we're interpreting things correctly, basically.
Yeah, I think that's so important because a lot of times we, all of us, we may not even know the root cause of why we feel anxious or angry or dysregulated. And I think sometimes we do have to play detective with our partner and they have to do it with us. And sometimes it can be really challenging. And one of the things you're kind of talking about there is alexithymia. And I know, you know, there's statistics out there about how many folks who are neurodivergent, not just autistic, but also ADHD and other types of neurodivergence have alexithymia. And so if you don't understand your own emotions or you don't understand why you're feeling a particular way, you certainly are going to have challenges understanding your partner's feelings and emotion. And it could be overwhelming. You know?
Yeah.
So, is that something that has impacted you over the years?
Yes. So yeah, it's been something really common. It still comes up. Like he still struggles. He's a lot better than when we first started, but he still struggles to really communicate exactly how he's feeling. And I have to do, like you said, the detective and kind of interpret and figure out what's going on. And then once I'm able to kind of state it back to them, he kind of is like, yeah, you're right. that's kind of how what's going on with me right now. So it just takes practice, I feel, and really, like I said, getting to know your partner, understanding them, and being on their side, being their team, and working together.
Yeah, it's so critical. And patience, which I did not have a lot of because, again, I was looking through a more neurotypical lens and I couldn't understand why it took so much longer for my ex to make decisions. And, you know, you're laughing. I mean, I can make I am not diagnosed ADHD, but I self-identify as ADHD. And, you know, I'm going to be 60. So a diagnosis isn't really necessary. I just know that I drove him crazy with all the change that I created in our lives. I thrived on it. It was a, you know, major dopamine hit for me. But, right. And so patience, I've learned it in every relationship that I've had since my separation and divorce, but I did not have it in our marriage.
Yeah. And then my partner struggles with that too, with change. I love change. It's like you said, I love change. I love things being spontaneous and not expecting things and stuff like that. But I've learned with him, that's okay as long as I give him kind of prepare him and give him a heads up and everything like that so that he can process it in his brain and become comfortable with the ideas and stuff like that so that we are able to kind of do the things and exciting things that I like to do, but it doesn't overwhelm him.
Yeah. Again, so important when you understand what you each need to thrive as individuals and in the relationship. It makes all the difference in the world.
Exactly. So
I really like to talk a little bit more about the structure because you've got two young kids and, you know, I only had one and I remember my ex saying, and we talked about this jokingly, again, before we knew we were a neurodiverse couple, we joked that if we had a second child, we would have gotten divorced probably before the baby was born.
Yes.
So I'd love to hear how you've created some structure in your life, especially, you know, as co-parents of two young children. I think that'll be helpful to a lot of the folks out there that are listening.
Yeah, and I do want to preface it with life happens and things change.
Oh, yeah.
Plans change. You're not always going to be able to stay exactly with the structure that you have in place. And there has to be some flexibility because such is life.
Right.
But what has really helped, and this is going back to me before I even met my husband, what I really work best with is structure when it comes to ADHD. And staying consistent with things. So I brought that into my relationship. And I think a lot of people kind of feel I don't know, they feel weird about having to maybe schedule things in or create routines so that you're able to kind of meet each other's needs and show each other affection or tell each other that you love each other, say good morning, say good night. But when it comes to our relationship, in order for me to stay consistent and not forget things, and then for his end, so that he's able to kind of get that repetition and it sticks with him and he's able to kind of start remembering things on his own, I think structure is so important in the, especially when you're in the beginning of your relationship. And then as time goes on, you kind of learn each other and you learn things and stuff like that that comes up, but you always have that foundation to come back to when it comes to making sure you're meeting each other's needs. And so we have a schedule in times where we want to have important conversations. We schedule in times where one person maybe wants to do a certain thing that they enjoy, and then maybe I want to do something else or something different another time. We have to schedule those things in so that way there's like no question about it. We know that it's coming up and nobody's got any kind of negative thing to say about it because we both agree to do these things. And then also scheduling times when we're intimate with one another. And then when we're doing chores together, for me, it really is helpful when we do them together. So, and he understands that and he supports me in that way. So we schedule in those times where we take care of the household together. And then creating routines, like I said, for affection and giving each other compliments and kind of just maybe sometimes we're able to be spontaneous and stuff like that. We are able to do that only because we've learned and we've built up this repetition and these routines so that we can have that kind of spontaneity. And I know in the very beginning of our relationship, I thought everything had to be spontaneous.
Me too.
Everything had to be spontaneous, or that means that I'm not loved or I'm not cared for. But that's so not true. And that's something that I've learned over time. And also having structure with how we have conversations so that we're making sure that we stay on track and we're focused on what's the goal of this conversation. So we'll even create like an agenda sometimes just to make sure.
I love that. I recommend it to neurodiverse couples all the time in my support group. I know it sounds very business-like, but it allows you both to understand kind of what the boundaries are of the conversation, right?
Exactly. And then also creating kind of a routine for or structure for how to answer certain questions, because I do like when I get complimented. My love language, one of my love languages is words of affirmation. So I like compliments and I like more thoughts and detailed answers instead of it's fine.
Yeah.
there was a lot of the time I would come like, oh, how does this dress look? Or what do you think about this? Oh, it's fine. And so I kind of had to create that kind of routine structure. And when I ask these type of questions, this is X, Y, and Z, kind of the answer that I'm looking for and stuff like that. And so over time, you eventually don't have to do this all the time. You don't have to remind them or remind him or him remind me, because we've just learned over time. So that spontaneity and everything, it does come eventually. But in the beginning, you do have to do the work to kind of put that foundation in place. And that's something that I've learned especially when neurodivergent relationship.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And I know for those couples that are listening, or even, you know, an individual in a neurodiverse relationship, you have a choice, right? You can either have connection or you can have repeated conflict. And yes, right? So I think that, you know, all the things we've talked about are important to remember, that if you want connection, you're both going to have to do the work. And I think it's definitely harder for folks that have been together for many, many years and then find out in their 40s, 50s, or 60s that they're in a neurodiverse relationship, because there's a lot of anger and judgment and resentment that's been built. But yeah. if you're both committed to, you know, connection, and really, I do think it has to be both, that there are different ways you can do things. And like you said, creating the routines, literally, Chris, it does create new neural pathways in your brain.
Yes.
Right? So as you're creating the new neural pathways, these new ways of connecting and treating each other become the norm.
Exactly.
Right? And you change the habits that you use on a regular basis. Your habits change regarding communication. Your habits change regarding household chores. You're changing the way you parent or the way you co-parent, but it doesn't happen overnight, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I love that. Do you all use a joint calendar?
We do.
Okay.
We do.
On your phone or?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's called FamCal. That's what we use.
Okay. Awesome. I haven't heard of that. So that's really helpful for folks that want to do that joint calendar. And the other thing I hear is, and this goes for all types of neurodiversity, that sometimes it takes more than one alarm on the phone.
Yes.
Do you want to speak to how that's working with you? Go ahead.
Yes. So for me, I do know that I get very forgetful, and then I'll hear the alarm go off and I'm like, okay, we'll do this. And then the next moment it's gone. Uh-huh. And so having alarms that go off leading up to that time, and maybe that's probably like every hour, maybe four or five hours ahead of time, just so that we're prepared. We know it's coming up. For my husband as well, it helps with us being prepared, making sure we're ready for whatever we have scheduled on the calendar. So yes, definitely the reminders are important.
Yeah. And you and I are laughing about it because it is funny. Somebody else might look into our relationships or your marriage and say, what the heck? Why do you have five alarms going off? And I remember, again, before I knew I was in a neurodiverse marriage, my ex-husband would set 3, 4, 5, 6 alarms on his phone just to get up, you know, in the mm-hmm. morning. And they were really loud alarms. It was like a foghorn going off. And I was like, at some point we stopped sleeping in the same bedroom because, you know, I couldn't hear those alarms going off. It just jarred my whole nervous system. But he needed it. And so, respecting what you each need to have, you know, structure, but also to be able to do the things you want to do together, so you're not disappointing each other, is really, really important.
Exactly. And I do want to add to you stating that you guys slept in separate bedrooms. And I want to say this because I know a lot of people see that as, oh, that's such a negative thing. But sometimes you do need your space. Sometimes maybe sleeping separately is what's best, especially if one person has to get up early or maybe we're taking turns with the baby or something like that. Sometimes sleeping in separate bedrooms is okay. It doesn't mean your marriage is ending, as long as you're still building that connection with one another and you're still coming back to one another and you're meeting each other's needs. Just because you're not sleeping in separate bedrooms doesn't mean that there's something wrong with your marriage. And I just wanted to add to that because we've done that before as well. Slept in separate bedrooms and sometimes we sleep together. So it just depends on what's going on.
Yes. Amen. And thank you for reiterating that, because I will tell you, the physical and sexual intimacy in my marriage never went away. I mean, until we divorced, we were still very connected there. It was both of our love languages, physical touch. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, sleeping in separate bedrooms allowed, and I can't remember how many years we did it. It wasn't our entire marriage. I want to say like maybe the last 6 years of our marriage. What it did for us, and I can't speak to anybody else, is my ex and I were on very different schedules. So he would go into work at 2 or 3 o'clock, and I would go into work at, 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. So if he was coming to sleep at 6 o'clock in the morning and yes. I was waking up at 6:30, he was jarring me out of my last half hour or hour of sleep.
Yes.
And not intentionally meaning to wake me up, but the bed moves, I hear him, whatever. So I was pissed and I was annoyed and we'd get into fights. And then he had an opportunity to do his own thing until he was ready to go to bed at 6 o'clock and he wasn't disturbing me, Mm-hmm. And I think it really, really worked for him. Mm-hmm. I missed the snuggling and I missed the cuddling and I missed the big spoon, little spoon stuff as we fell asleep at night. But I knew we needed to have separate bedrooms because we were literally annoying each other every day, yeah. every night. And so whatever works for you, and then this is the other thing I tell folks, Chris, don't discuss these things with folks that are not in a neurodiverse relationship.
Exactly.
Right. Because they're going to think you're wacko or they're going to think there's something wrong. And yes. long as you and your partner are okay with the decisions you're making, that's all that matters. That's exactly. it. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. So I'm so glad that you guys knew in the beginning and that you took such a proactive approach to understanding each other and being curious. And I know you have said that there are a lot of really positive things that you have both introduced into your relationship. And I'd really like to talk about how you use humor, number one, and playfulness and gratefulness for each other. So can we talk about those three things?
Yes. So a really big lesson that I've learned with any relationship really, but especially your romantic relationship, is that you always have to be working on maintaining that positive thought process, that positive connection between you and the other person in order for it to be successful. So with me, with my ADHD, I do suffer from rejection sensitivity dysphoria, and which I'll summarize as like a fear of real or perceived rejection. And my husband does have a tendency to take the negative route about things and think really negatively about things or think the worst about things. So we have to really do the work to keep ourselves in a really positive state of mind about each other. And it makes resolving conflict and working on the hard parts so much easier when you like the person, right?
Right.
So we do this by, we've established, we first made sure that we understand that each of us have each other's best intentions at heart. And this again goes back to, like I stated earlier, about being curious. If something comes across in a negative way, instead of assuming the worst, we get curious about what's actually going on. And we also make each other laugh, and we make each other laugh often. And I think that is so important, especially in our relationship when we have these tendencies to become a little bit negative, is to kind of lighten the mood. And especially when you find that the other person's upset, this is what something that really helps us is to laugh or make jokes or just lighten the mood. And we know it's not being insensitive because we know why we're doing it. We're doing mm-hmm. it because we're trying to help the other person kind of get out of this negative place that they're in. And we're also really playful with each other. And that looks like flirting, doing like little touches here and there and being silly. And then like randomly smiling at each other just to make that positive atmosphere. And we love to play games together. And occasionally we'll send each other nice messages and things like that. And then regularly practicing gratefulness and remembering to appreciate what you love about your partner is something really big for us, especially me. Like I said before, I have a tendency to kind of overreact. So I that's one way that I calm myself down too. And it's so easy to convince yourself why this person is no good, why you shouldn't be with this person anymore. If all you do is focus on that negative and focus on the negative things, when in reality, sometimes it's really not all that bad. And it's probably something that you can work on. So when we practice gratefulness, it kind of brings us back to focusing on the good, and it helps us get a clearer picture of the entire situation, instead of just being in that negative place. Because I strongly believe in, from research, that our brains are so easily able to fall into that negative place because our brains are wired to protect us. So we actually have to make that conscious effort, and make it a habit to remember to be grateful. And for me, like I said, this really helps in moments where I'm getting frustrated with my husband. So like, for example, this has happened on numerous occasions. We'll be going somewhere, he'll be driving, and then maybe we've missed our turn or something like that, and my husband, he'll keep driving, and I'm just looking, I've noticed there's been like 3, 4, 5 different areas that we could have turned around really quickly. And right. So I get really frustrated, and because this has happened so often, I've learned the pattern of just pausing in those moments. The quickest way for me to cool down is to kind of pause and be grateful that at least, okay, he's missing all the turns, but at least he's trying to keep us safe because he didn't feel like those were appropriate places to turn around. So that's kind of like, okay, at least he's trying to be keep us safe. I'm grateful that he cares enough that he's able to make sure that where he's turning around, we're not going to be in any kind of conflict or bad situation. He wants to make sure it's an appropriate place. So at least I'll be grateful for that.
I love that. I love that reframing, Chris. I wish I had done the same thing in my marriage instead of getting very frustrated, angry, and scream. Yeah, that is wonderful. I think the humor piece and the playfulness is so critical. The relationship I had after my divorce that lasted almost a year, I literally laughed every single day. And we were a neurodiverse couple too. I laughed every single day that I was with this man. Mm-hmm. And he sometimes didn't even realize that he was being funny. But I found so much humor in the way in which he communicated sometimes. And he would often say to me, "It's really not that funny, Mona." And I couldn't stop laughing. So I wasn't laughing at him. I was mm-hmm. laughing at the situation and the way in which he was describing it or seeing it. And, you know, it just lightened the mood over and over again. Yeah. Because he could, my ex-husband was the same way. And this man I dated was the same way. They really could focus on the negative before the positive. And that was very difficult for me. I definitely have the rejection sensitivity dysphoria. It, you know, will bring me to tears. I don't know about you.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, and I would say things, and it didn't affect my ex-husband. He did not have rejection sensitivity dysphoria, at least not with me. I mean, maybe mm-hmm. he did in other situations, but definitely not with me. And I think for those listeners that don't know about RSD, please look it up, because if you or your partner are experiencing it, you may be taking things very, very personally that aren't. And
exactly
right. And sometimes, you know, a blunt statement or more black and white thinking may make you feel like you're not loved, that you're being rejected, that you're not valued. When the fact of the matter is, you know, if you get curious and you ask some questions, or you focus on the actual words rather than the tone, right? You can see that the intent wasn't to hurt you or to reject you or to make you feel other or invalidated. It was really your partner was just saying what was on their mind. you know, not meaning to hurt you, right?
Exactly. And yeah. it helps, being curious also helps. And I don't know if I mentioned this, but in the beginning of our relationship, we did try to go to therapists to try to get some help. But I wasn't able to kind of find a therapist that really specialized in what we were struggling with. So we kind of had to learn on our own. Mm-hmm. But getting curious also really helps with not having to remember so much. Okay, I need to use this type of way we're speaking, and we need to make sure we're saying in this manner and all that kind of stuff, because you're already, it helps you kind of take that step back and be a little bit more sensitive and more understanding of your partner, and not having to worry so much about what the therapists are like. Sometimes the therapist will give you exactly the things you're supposed to say. And it's hard for me to remember to do all of those things in the moment. So the easiest way for me to kind of come down and take a step back and be a little bit more understanding, and for my partner as well, is to take on, like you said, that curious mindset when you approach the conversation.
Yeah, it makes all the difference in the world. And, you know, one of the things that I hear often from neurodiverse couples is that there's very little, if any, emotional safety in their relationship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's because they didn't know they were a neurodiverse couple for, you know, many, many, many years. And they kept misunderstanding each other and, mm-hmm. you know, unintentionally hurting each other, causing each other emotional pain, maybe even some trauma. And so when you have a very different mindset, if you choose to stay in your relationship, mm-hmm. things, I mean, the way in which you're describing how you both learn together and work through, you know, some of the challenges you had, I know is going to be really, you know, helpful and enlightening to those folks who want to stay connected, who want to stay in a relationship where they've had struggles in the past and they're trying to find the right balance moving forward. I know everything you have said is going to be so helpful, Chris. Everything.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And so I think it's interesting. We didn't talk about this when you mentioned this, that, you know, when your husband's family knew he was autistic, they didn't talk about it with him and they didn't discuss it. And I know, you know, way back when there was a lot of shame attached to an autistic or an Asperger's diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I really hope things are getting better for those folks that are getting diagnosed or self-identifying now.
Yeah.
You know, because of social media and because there are so many neurodivergent folks that are sharing their stories and strategies and tools, because we're all differently wired, you know, yeah. and there shouldn't be shame attached to differences.
Exactly.
There should be opportunities for us to understand each other, accept each other. And if we constantly want to change our partner, I think we have to look at whether this is the right relationship for us. And it sounds like you all were not trying to change each other. You were trying to understand each other and still.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So is there anything else that you want to share about any of the topics that we've talked about, or any other words of wisdom that you want to share before I have you share your contact information so people can reach out to you?
Yeah, just make sure that you work on kind of understanding and being patient and accepting of yourself and of the other person, your partner who you're in the relationship with. I think because you're always going to run into bumps and hurdles and problems. But as long as you have that acceptance and that compassion and patience with each other, you can kind of work through anything, is how I feel. So just remember to give each other grace, give yourself grace, give your partner grace, and just work on understanding each other, I think, is the big takeaway that I'd want to share with your audience.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And that's one of the reasons that I created the Neurodiverse Love Conversation cards. I created those last year, and I've just released the Neurodiverse Love Conversation card workbook, because if I had known that I was in a neurodiverse marriage, there are so many questions that I would have wanted us both to ask each other, mm-hmm. so that we could have understood each other better rather than judge each other. I mean, we both judged each other, you know, because we were looking at our marriage and each other through our own lenses, you know?
Yeah.
So, exactly. Yeah. I think that's a great last thing to share. So I know this is going to be so helpful to a lot of folks. And if folks want to reach out to you, I know you do coaching for ADHD. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about what you do as a coach and then the best way for them to reach out to you?
Yeah. So growing up, I've always tried to fit myself into the world, the neurotypical world of others. And so I came to the realization that I actually, in order for me to thrive and be happy with my life, I need to build a life that I love and a life that I enjoy and that I'm able to be successful in. So after I discovered that, and it was the really big shift for me, I really felt passionate about wanting to help other individuals with ADHD come to that place, and then kind of help them build a life that they love, just like I did. And that includes with helping them with different aspects of life and also with their business and careers and stuff like that, because I do come from a background of career coaching and things like that. So I help with different strategies and tools, but my biggest focus is helping them build that life that they love and helping them with their mindset and their thinking. Because I believe when you learn how to control your thinking, especially with ADHD, you're able to kind of maneuver through any ADHD challenges that can come up, because there's always going to be challenges. It's never going to end.
Right. Absolutely.
So you're going to have to take on a mindset in order to be able to get through those moments and not let it bring you down or get you stuck. And then another thing that I'm building and actually launching pretty soon is a space. I really believe in the power of community and environment, and being surrounded by like-minded people who are on the same growth journey as you and trying to make the same kind of improvements. So I'm launching a space here really soon to help people with ADHD turn their plans into action and help them reach their goals. And there's other methods and things like that too involved with the opportunity. And it's a space where people can kind of learn and grow together, and work on making improvements to things like their diet, exercise, finances, being organized, their profession, whether that's their business or careers, and their relationships as well, being able to learn those skills and other things like that, I think is really important. And I feel like when we surround ourselves and we kind of create that environment and space, and we're able to stay focused and making sure we're headed towards our goals and we're meeting our goals and having that accountability and people in your corner, I think is so important when it comes to success. It's how I was able to be successful. So I want to give that opportunity to other people as well.
I wish I had met you when I was your age, because I'm almost twice your age, right? Your early 30s. I think it would have been a lifesaver for me. I think a lot of us, you know, who are neurodivergent, I think we overfunction. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's at work, sometimes it's at home, sometimes it's in both areas, at the oftentimes detriment of ourselves or mm-hmm. our relationships. And so to be able to figure out the best way to live your most authentic life.
Yes.
When you're younger, rather than having to do it when you're, you know, I've learned it now in my 50s. I wish I mm-hmm. had learned it in my 20s or 30s. So, you know, yeah, knowing your neurotype, but also knowing what you need to thrive as an individual then can help you also be a better partner if you are able to communicate about those things with your partner. So what is the best? I love what you're doing. I love that you're creating a community. I think that's fantastic. What is the best place for folks to reach you? Is it your website? Do you prefer email, social media? And you can give all of those and I'll put them in the show notes too.
Yeah. So if you're wanting to reach out and work with me, you can reach me at info@plannerexe.com.
Okay. Wonderful. So I'll put that in the show notes. And is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
No, this has been awesome. And I thank you for letting me be able to share this with your community. And I really hope that it helps someone out there to kind of navigate the crazy world of relationships and marriage and everything like that, but and also help them see the beauty in it and how they can work through things and get better. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's been a pleasure and I really appreciate you sharing a little bit about your individual story and some of the things that you have done with your husband to make a neurodiverse relationship really thrive. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you.